We enter into the Passiontide, these last 2 weeks of Lent, in which the cross and the statues are veiled, they're covered. As it's in this Passiontide that we draw closer and into Jesus' passion, where his glory is veiled from our eyes, where we're not able to see the divine glory in Jesus. All the great miracles in which we're able to behold his power, and any sense of consolation in the presence of Jesus, that becomes hidden from us. And so he appears with this glory hidden to just be a mere man. That's how he appears to our human eyes. And we see just his weakness. But the glory of God, which is veiled and hidden from our human eyes, it's revealed through obedience and through suffering and death. It's through obedience that God's glory is revealed. Which even that term, obedience, it sounds cold and lifeless. But when we think of obedience, to think of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he's praying to his Father and sweating blood, that's not cold and lifeless. It's filled with something else entirely. It's where he prays, Father, if this hour might pass from me, Father, if this cup might pass from me, but not my will, but thy will be done. Obedience and suffering and death, that Jesus, who is the grain of wheat who falls into the ground and dies, but in doing so, he produces much fruit. In the Gospel of John, there is no account that we hear of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And so we hear something of it echoed in this gospel today, as well as in the first reading from Hebrews. That we hear of Jesus who offered prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to the one who was able to save him from death, and he was heard. His Father heard his prayers. But he heard the prayer as well, not my will, thy will be done, Father. And son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. And when he was made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. From the gospel, I am troubled now. Yet what should I say? Father, save me from this hour. But it was for this purpose that I came to this hour. It's through obedience to God, and it's through suffering and death that the glory of God is revealed, that otherwise remains hidden from our eyes. And we forget this so quickly. We forget it so quickly that when suffering comes along in our life, or when we're confronted with death, someone we know dies, that it can bring us to this dangerous fork in the road. That in the face of suffering and death, it can bring me either to greater communion with God or to isolation and coldness. That when I confront suffering and death, and my prayer is that of obedience, Lord, thy will be done, that it brings us into communion, a closeness with Jesus, with his will, a closeness with Jesus in my suffering and in his. But it's a dangerous point too, because it can bring us, when it's my will be done, or God, where are you now? Where's your glory now, God, in the face of this suffering? That it focuses on my will, it can create a coldness in one's soul, and it can isolate a person. There's an incredible novel called Diary of a Country Priest. It's by George Bernanos and was written in the 1930s. In the first page, it has one of the greatest of opening lines. See if this sounds familiar. The priest is writing in his diary, "My parish is bored stiff, no other word for it." He's speaking of this spiritual malaise of his people, and he comes as this new priest to this little French town called Amnicourt. And he arrives, and what he receives there is this chilling welcome from the people. They see him as sort of this naive, simpleton priest, and they despise him. When he receives his first letter from a parishioner, it's a letter from the one woman who comes to his daily mass, the one person at his daily mass, and it's her telling him that he should request a transfer. But he has, and the whole novel unfolds as this sort of Stations of the Cross for this young French priest. And it comes to this point, right in the middle of it, though, there's this incredible encounter with grace. This town that he's sent to is mostly poor, save for this one family who live in this chateau, a count and a countess. And their daughter comes to him in the church, and she's suicidal. Her father wants to toss her out of the house. And her mom, whom he goes and visits, the priest does, she's in this state of cold grief because a handful of years before she had lost her infant son. She lost her infant son, and she can't let go of him or his memory, and she just clings to him. And clinging to him, she had become estranged and isolated from her family and from God. Her husband's in this open affair, and she doesn't even care. She says, "What does it bother me? He's in an affair with the one woman who comes to his daily mass." Her daughter hates her because she's indifferent to how her father treats her. He tells her how awful of a condition her daughter's in. She says, "What does it matter to me? Maybe she'll experience a little bit of my suffering then." But she has this heart which has become cold and it's become bitter in the face of this suffering and the death and the loss of her son. And she clings to him. And there's this intense and escalating conversation and exchange between the two of them. The priest tells her that you have to give your son to God. You have to give everything to him so that he might break the stone walls around your heart. "God's broken me already," she said. "What more can he do? He's taken my son. I no longer fear him." "God took him from you for a time," the priest responded. "But your hard heart, your cold heart, may keep you from him for all eternity." "Hold your tongue," she said to him. "No, madam. Too many priests have held their tongues. I wish it were from pity and not cowardice." Then later she reared like a viper. "I've ceased to bother about God. When you forced me to admit that I hate him, will you be any better off, you idiot?" The priest responded, "You no longer hate him. Hate is indifference and contempt. Now at last you're face to face with him." And they go on, and there's this growing tension in the midst of it, but there's this growing sense slowly within her as he speaks to her of God's love that came to enter into our suffering and to save us from it, that her suffering is shared. And there's this point where she has her hand, her face in her hands, and she mumbles to him, "What must I say?" And he tells her, "Say, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Thy will be done." But she resists him further. And it goes on until finally there's this pendant that she's worn around her neck and has a little image of her son and a little lock of his hair. And she just clings tight to it all the time. symbolizing her clinging and refusing to let go of her son, refusing to give him into the hands of God. And at one point, she takes it, she rips it off her neck, and she throws it into the fire as this gesture of finally letting go in this obedience to God. The priest dives in after it and pulls it out of the fire, and he burns his cassock up to his elbow. But following this gesture, the stone walls around her heart begin to crumble. Thy will be done. Later, he receives a letter from her, and she thanks him for bringing her from this state of cold and dark despair into finally peace. Unless a grain of wheat falls and dies, it remains just a grain of wheat. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. For many in Dickinson, this has been a hard week in the face of death. A number of people have said, and people ask all the time, you know, in the face of death and in suffering, how do I feel close to God in the midst of that? How do I feel close to God in the midst of desolation? And I kind of always just want to say, I don't know. I mean, when you read the lives of the saints who experienced intense suffering, they didn't necessarily feel close to God much at all. And when you read the Psalms, you get the feeling that David and the other psalmists, for the most part, they felt quite far away from God. But closeness to God isn't about feelings. Closeness to God is about obedience. And I don't know how you feel close to God. And no one I know who seems to be close to God knows anything about how to feel that either. But I know that if we obey, occasionally those feelings follow. Not always, but occasionally. But I know that if we disobey, we don't have a shot at it. I don't know how you feel close to God, but I know how you are close to God. And it's a closeness that's hidden and it's veiled. God's glory is revealed through obedience, through putting my will to death. Lord, not my will, but your will be done. And the grain of wheat falls and it dies. But through that suffering and death, in this hidden but glorious way, we're brought to this deeper communion with Jesus, this deeper closeness with him in his suffering, in his passion, in his death, and in his glory.